Welcome to Deadly Departed. The do's, don'ts, and dangers of afterlife communication. This show discusses all aspects of afterlife communication, grief and grieving, the paranormal, and of course, parapsychology. There's real stories, scientific discussion, and most of all, real learning from paranormal experts and researchers. Here's your host, author of Deadly Departed, renowned evidential medium and spirit interventionist, Jock Brocas.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are in the world. My name is Jock, and welcome to another episode of Deadly Departed. Today we have some very special guests, guests that have an amazing story to tell, and have told this story in a recent book that's been doing very well. But one of the things that is very unique about this is there's so many people in the world think they're haunted. And I always have a saying that if you know you're haunted, you're probably not. And if you think you're haunted, then it warrants investigation. Because hauntings can be so subtle, but when they really come in force, it can turn your world upside down. And there is very few hauntings in the world that actually warrant investigation to this level. My guests today are Joni Mahan, who is the author of The Hanover Haunting with Deanna Simpson and Tom Simpson. And I'm delighted that all of you decided to come on board today to have a chat with us. How are you all doing?
Really good.
Very well.
Doing wonderful, and thank you for having us. You know, we're honored. Thank you.
No, absolutely. I'm honored. Now, tell us a little bit about your, just both of your backgrounds. Before I, firstly, Joni, thanks for putting it together, because it's very important. I know that you tell the story. You're the voice box for Dee and Tom. But I want to hear from you guys, you know, tell us a little bit about your story. You don't even need to tell anything about the house yet, but just how you guys kind of got together, your whole lives, you know, and when you come up to that point of you need a new house, you find a new home.
What had happened, Jock, is when Tom and I met, we were just both going through a bad divorce. He's got three children. I have three children. We were living in a small apartment, and we started looking for homes. And Tom and I, we had actively looked at several homes, and none of them just really reached out to us. But the moment that we saw this house on Maple Avenue here in Hanover, I just had to have it. It called to me, like. Tom was not very excited.
Yeah, it didn't do anything for me. Did it for her. So,
do you think
I had to live with her?
Do you think Dee that the you chose the house or the house chose you?
The house chose us. Chose me, definitely, for sure, because I was obsessed with this house. I mean, don't get me wrong. Joni's been to the home. It's an adorable home. But it was in town. It wasn't exactly what we were looking for. But I was so obsessed with it that even when I got off from work at the hospital, I kept driving by and, you know, asking the people who flipped the house if I could please look one more time. Can I please look in? I just had to have it. It reminded me of a childhood home when I was a little girl growing up with my mom and dad and brother in Kentucky. So, definitely was drawing to me. Mm-hmm.
Do you think it was mainly your memories of your childhood or something else that was drawing you to it?
Something else.
Okay. But how did it feel when you were thinking about obviously your childhood? It brought back happy memories for you?
Oh, yeah, Jack, when I tried to explain it to Tom that when we both walked into the house with the realtor, I was like, not a realtor, I'm sorry, Pat and Linda who flipped the house. I automatically was like, oh my gosh, Tom, the smells of this home. Every home has its own scent.
Yeah.
And I said, it smells like the home I grew up in. I said, look, Tom, it has mom and dad's tile that was in their kitchen, right?
Yeah. It didn't do anything for me.
And I kept saying, oh, this is exactly the home that it was when I lived in Struble in Kentucky. And, it definitely had me to the point where, Jock, we were getting signs that we shouldn't have the house. Like, we didn't have the money to put down. Tom had to borrow the money from his parents to get down $30,000 for it. Tom didn't like it. I was begging Tom. We were just having all these obstacles, but I wouldn't give up. I just said, please, please, please buy me this house.
And Tom, you mentioned a couple of things. It did nothing for you. You weren't remotely interested in it at all.
Well, it did. Yeah, it didn't excite me at all. I mean, I just wanted to keep looking for houses, but she was set on that house.
And then you did what every other man does in the world and gives in to their wife.
Oh, well, yeah. Gave in to the boss.
Listen, I've been there many times. I'm there now. It's a lot easier. I feel for you, absolutely. Now, this is something I want to just jump onto Joni a minute, because when you were writing the story, Joni, how did you feel about this aspect of the house calling to Dee?
As an experienced paranormal investigator and researcher, and also someone who has gone through similar situations, I definitely identified it for what it was very early on when we started talking, because she was just in the perfect place at the perfect time. The ghosts in that house were looking for someone exactly like her, somebody they could mold, somebody they could torture, because they tried to sell that house to other people, and the deals kept falling through until the Simpsons showed up on the doorstep. And that's when the sale magically went through, because that's who they wanted. They were picking her more than she was picking the house.
And do you think, you know, as your experience, because you and I have spoke before, you know, we've had a good long chat before, and I know your background as a paranormal investigator and an intuitive, a sensitive, and, you know, you've written a number of books in this. Was this case different to anything that you've ever dealt with, or has there been similar cases where, you know, this kind of pull has happened before?
I have experienced this once before with another book that I wrote about a house in Gardner, Massachusetts. The book was Bones in the Basement. But Deanna's story and Tom's story were far more extreme than that, because it got so violent. Every time they'd try to leave or think about leaving, something worse would happen to them. So it was an extreme haunting. I've never experienced one of that magnitude before or since.
Jump back to yourself, Dee and Tom, especially you, Dee. When, you know, I listened to the book, my wife and I loved it. You know, it's Joni did a brilliant job for you guys. But what was
she did
absolutely, and I said that to her. You know, it was very well done. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It kept us enthralled, and you know, we got to know Tom very well as we were calling out to Tom all the time. So, in a funny way, but what was the first thing that you felt, Dee, that you thought there's something different here? I'm not feeling quite the same. Can you go back to that?
Sure. The moment that we moved in, and Tom had to work the week that we moved in, and I told Joni, I said, well, I was, you know, all of our boxes were in there. I was unpacking. I was alone. And that joyous, happy, overwhelming, you know, family, euphoric feeling that I had that, you know, drew me to the house. As soon as I got in the home, I started to feel like out of place, a sense of thickness. It when I was unpacking, I always felt like something was watching me behind my back, and I was constantly turning around and just having those feelings. I had a cat at the time, her name was Skittles, and I noticed that she started acting scared of the house, and it just immediately had flipped, and that feeling quickly changed once we moved in.
How did you feel, Tom, with it when you first moved in? You know, because you're kind of skeptical in nature, which is a good thing, because you're always looking at, you know, the reality of it, and, you know, is there another explanation for it? But how did you actually feel when you moved into the home?
I can't say that I felt the same feelings Deanna felt. It's like, as time went on, I, in my own mind, began to wonder, like, where is she coming up with this stuff? You know, figure I can explain this away, explain that away, but I can't say I felt the feelings that she felt, that, you know, coming from the house itself.
But of course, as we go further into the book, we go further into your story, you did actually start to feel things, and you know, you eventually came round in the end. But it must have been an incredible journey for you. Even, you know, even though Deanna was, you know, feeling that from the first moment, you know, it must have been, when you look back on it, it must have been like, this is like incredible. This has kind of changed my life upside down, and I've gone
skeptical to being a believer, you know, from beginning to end in gradual steps. Yeah,
I'm going to ask you a direct question, Tom, and I'm sure everybody would want to know this. Now, I know there was times that Dee, you know, was feeling really scared and she was overwhelmed, and I'm so sorry what you went through, Dee, and, you know, we'll get into the more paranormal investigations later, but was there any time, Tom, that you felt scared? Were you frightened at any point?
Not. I missed what you said there.
He said, were you frightened at any point?
Oh, was I frightened at any point?
And that
point?
Was probably when you got your probably, scratch.
Yeah, I was going to say probably when I was sitting there in the kitchen with her, because I was just kidding with her, saying, you know, about your ghost. I forget the exact term I used at that point, and I ended up with a scratch on my arm. So, yeah, that turned me pretty quickly into this is for real, because it was something physical I could see and experience, yeah.
Yeah, I know that at that point, I think my wife and I were driving down the road and we're going, oh my God, Tom, you must get it now. You've got it, you know, you've been scratched and this came from nowhere. And, you know, we kind of felt like we were part of that story and going through it with you. But so Dee, you know, when you were obviously going through this as well, what was the big aha moment, the phenomena that you witnessed that was like, there is no way this can be explained. Something's going on that's beyond the realm of science.
Oh my gosh, Joni. There were so many experiences that I had felt in that house. I think what I'm going to have to say, Jock, is that the most scaring, the most devastating, there's a couple, if I may share with you real quickly.
Absolutely, yeah, time, absolutely.
Thank you. One time, Tom and I were sitting in the family room, we were watching TV, and I said, I'm going to go upstairs, I'm going to go to bed now, I'm tired. As I was walking through the family room into the kitchen, the attic was turned into a loft, and that was our bedroom. I told him I was going to bed. I opened up the door and I started to go up the steps. I was on the eighth step. And at that point, I saw my female cat, Peony. And she started walking around and I was just like, oh, hey, baby Peony. Hey, sweetie. You know, mommy's coming to bed. And then at that point, I just, you know, you got that fight or flight feeling. Like when you're about to get in a car accident, you know,
yeah,
and your chest is pounding. I started looking around and then all of a sudden I looked in the corner upstairs in this bedroom and I started seeing this black mass, and it spanned it out. It had a definition of like a cape. And as it was coming out of the wall, I stood there in disbelief. The cat ran off, but I just stood there. I was just frozen watching this thing. And as I was watching this thing, it started to materialize. The image of the black mass just got closer to me. And these tree branch type like arms shot out of it with like talons, like hands, like a tree, like a witch. And as it was coming to me, it came right up on me, pushed me in the shoulders, knocked me off my feet. And then I hit the back of the ledge of the wall, and I hit the door with such an impact that I flew out, and it felt like, Jock, that it had grabbed my hair and was dragging me across the kitchen floor until I hit the kitchen table. And at that
and
point,
I think Tom I think it's important to note, just let me interject a little second here for anybody that's listening now, is that Dee was totally conscious. She wasn't sleeping or dreaming. This was real, happening to you at real time.
Correct. And then at that point, Tom had heard the slamming of the door hit the wall, and he heard the volume of my body hitting and sliding. And at that point, Tom came running.
She told me what happened. I was like, no way, that can't happen. But there she is laying on the floor. She ended up having a cracked tailbone.
Yeah.
The
fall was so hard. I was flown so hard that I couldn't get my breath when I was laying on the floor. The air had been knocked out of me, and Tom was like grabbing me like, what happened? And I remember you saying, I'm going to call the paramedics. What happened? And I just said, don't touch me. And I started crying and sobbing, which left him.
Obviously, like, what's upstairs? You know, I went up there looking for something. Wasn't anything there. And she told me her story. And it's like, I saw the end result, but it's like a thing that you don't just, that doesn't just happen. You can fall down steps, but you don't go flying out the door like that. So.
And then I ended up going.
What was that?
Sorry, that must have made you think, you know, make seriously consideration starting to change at that point when she would, you know, went through that episode.
Right. Well, it made me, how can I say, it's not that you don't believe your wife, but it made me more of a believer in what she was saying. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. A horrific experience. Let me jump into my paranormal investigator friend here, Johnny, because there's something I want to talk to you about with this. You and I have a lot of experience with these things, but there's a big difference in people seeing little black shadows, or even sometimes mistaking a residual energy, to what she actually experienced. This black mass had an intelligence and a life of its own. It's kind of different to what many people claim their experiences are, isn't it?
Oh, most definitely. Most people, if they see a shadow or something move, sometimes it can be explained by traffic or something moving in the yard, but to see a true shadow person materialize from separating from the corner and walking and, you know, sprouting these long arms with long fingers and walking towards you, it's one of those moments where you cannot believe what you're seeing. And I can see why she was frozen in place, because I think most of us would be too, because that's not what you expect. That's not how life works. And to have something like that happen is just absolutely flabbergasting.
And of course, we have the physical manifestation of actually physically moving, you know, interacting in the material world by causing harm and throwing you. So it's a big difference, isn't it, Joni, to what people say when they see a little shadow or they think that they're actually haunted and they're not. You know, it's this is real. This is a real case. This was really terrifying. And this is a big distinction that I want listeners to recognize, that not every shadow that you see is anything negative or even paranormal. I mean, Joni, you've had many experiences over the years and years and years you've been doing it, and the books that you've been doing it. This is a completely different and unique unique thing. How many times would you say, Joni, that in your career that you have I explained rationally people's hauntings to them when they think they're actually going under something like this, in which they clearly aren't?
Quite a few times. Actually, most of the time when I go in, because I'm also a medium, so I'm able to determine mm-hmm. what's going on there. But most of the time, it's just a former homeowner that's still hanging around the house, and they're not causing any problems. They don't want anything, but they've done just enough to get the homeowner's attention, and it terrifies them. But Deanna's situation was so much different, because most of the time, ghosts are not able to materialize in front of you. And then they're also taking it one step further, physically harming you. And that's something that we seldom see. It's way out there. No matter what you might see on TV and movies, these things don't normally happen. So when they actually happen to you, it's horrifying. And then you start to wonder, what else is it going to do? If it can throw me down the stairs.
Yeah.
You know, what else is it going to do? And so that fear gets rooted in your head. And, you know, for Deanna, she just lived in constant terror, because what's next? What's it going to do next? And, you know, how can you live like that?
And, you know, and Deanna, just jumping back to you, I mean, the Tom wasn't the only one that was marked. You were also marked as well, wasn't you?
I'm sorry, would you say that?
Yeah, I can hardly hear you.
What'd you say, Jock? Say that again, sir.
You were also marked as well. You also had dermographic marks on you.
Tom and I both.
Deanna did also, yes.
Yes, we both had marks. I had 3 scratches mm-hmm. on my back with the letter M carved into it.
But these were at different times.
Yeah, different times throughout our home mm-hmm. there. We've been bit. We've been scratched. Yes, and Tom was marked to the point where blood surfaced up on his arm.
Mm-hmm.
He had a big gash across his back. I mean, yes, I mean, this thing was definitely marking
the point
us.
As a, I don't know how to describe, as the male or the supposed protector, you think, what can you do to protect your wife? You know, in the beginning, like I said, I just disregard a lot of things, thinking, oh, it's this or that. But when you start getting physical harm, then you think, okay, now what can you do to prevent this from happening again?
How did you feel, Tom, when you had, I mean, you'd gone through, as you admit, that, you know, you found it very difficult at the beginning to believe everything, but how did you actually feel when those scratches, you know, when you actually were physically assaulted by this intelligence on your body, how did you feel about that?
Well, that's why I say you feel like, hey, I'm helpless in this situation, because if you can at least see something, you can defend yourself mm-hmm. against it. And it's like, how do you defend yourself against something that's there, but you don't physically see it? I mean, Deanna saw like a black, I don't know what I call it, mass or whatever. I never saw anything that attacked her. So it's like, how do you go after it?
Do you think there's a reason?
What was that?
Do you think there's a reason that you, do you think there's a reason that you never experienced as much as D? What do you think that was?
I don't know. I mean, there's all kinds of, we had different investigators and things through there that people have different reasons, but I don't know. I honestly don't know if there's a reason. It seems that they were after her for some reason, but I don't know. No.
Go ahead, Joni, please.
I think that they deliberately singled her out because they were trying to drive a wedge between the two of them.
Absolutely. I was going to go
happened
that.
To Deanna, And the less Tom believed her, the angrier Deanna got. And I think that was the goal, was to separate her from her protector.
And also, I want to jump on to your daughter as well, because your daughter really suffered in that home as well. I mean, she really, she didn't feel like home to her, did it?
No, it didn't. And the moment that she moved in with Tom and I, everything was, you know, love and light. She fixed up her room and, you know, she was living her life, going to college. And she started hearing things, simple things like walking, bumps in the night. She started hearing voices calling her name. She started hearing the doorknob jar and then open up and simple things like that until the situation with my daughter Amber is when Tom and I went to Kentucky to go visit my mom and dad. And while she was home, Tom had a, what do you call it, Tom? A deer head.
An elk head.
Oh, I remember this.
Yep, that was mounted, double latched onto the wall that his brother.
Well, my brother put, it's one of those type, it's not just hung, it's, it had the hooks in the back of the wood. He had to put it on and slot it down.
So you had to slide it down.
You had to lift up and pull out to take it off.
And then Amber was reading a book at 3 o'clock in the morning and she heard this loud bang coming from Tom's den, which we had the den bedroom made into an office. The door was locked because Tom has guns. He's a hunter. And we had the door locked and Amber took the key above the door. But at first, before she did any of that, she called us at 3 a.m. She had a knife in her hand. Remember that? Yeah. She was like, Mom, there's somebody in the house. They broke in. There's somebody. It's coming from Tom's room. There's somebody in the house. And, I was like, Amber, just get out of the house, go call your father, you know, call the police, you know, we'll come home tomorrow. And go ahead, tell him. The most terrifying part about is when we opened up,
when they opened the door, the elk head was laying on the floor. Like I said, would have to physically push up and pull out to take it off. So it's not like it could just fall off, per se.
That's an awful lot of weight to move from one place to another.
What do you estimate that to weigh? 400 pounds?
No, that's just a hit. Probably 50 pounds for the head.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's not going to be a picture that falls off the wall, so to speak, you know.
Right. Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
And it was placed in the elk head was placed in the middle of the room. It didn't hit the desk. It didn't hit the lamp. It didn't fall straight. It was placed in the face that was looking at you.
I was just impressed it didn't break any antlers or anything. No. It's like it was, if it fell, it didn't hit anything or if it didn't seem like it.
Almost like it was lifted and then thrown down in that particular spot.
Right, right. Yep.
And How did your daughter feel about that? How did your daughter feel about all these things that was going on? Was she really scared? Did she want to get out?
Oh, Jock, at that point, when she left the home and we came back, we left our trip early. Amber told me, she said, Mom, this is just too much. This is beyond what I can handle. This is, and shortly after thereafter, she had moved out. And I was absolutely devastated, at that point, because you have a home that you can't
offer your siblings. Yeah.
Yes. You have a house that's not a home. And
yeah, exactly.
And when your daughter moves out, you know, as a parent, that makes you feel horrible.
Well, I felt a bit bad for Deanna because her daughter was moving out but I honestly, at that point, I thought that, in my personal opinion, I thought she had a party or something and they took this elk head off the wall or somehow got off, because I thought there's no way it could fall. And approximately, it was a year, I don't know the dates, Deanna probably remember, a year later, we were sitting at the kitchen table, Deanna and I, and heard this crash and opened the door, and there was on the floor again. So I felt,
wow.
I was in my head blaming Amber for taking off, but I felt it wasn't Amber's fault.
Poor kid.
But I didn't really
Johnny,
come that way.
Johnny, can I ask you, did you interview Amber?
Did I what?
Did you interview Amber?
I have met Amber a number of times, but no, not for the book. I took the story from Deanna's perspective, but I have talked to her about it since then. You know, she's confirmed everything that her mother said.
What was your feeling on her, you know, what she had gone through? Because obviously you would have had an intuitive feeling from her anyway, from when you met her.
I think, you know, Amber was an extension of her mother, and they knew that if by hurting Deanna's daughter and terrifying her, that they were in fact hurting Deanna. So, and I think they knew that it would drive a wedge between Amber and Tom as well. So they were just really trying to, I think they were just trying to get rid of Tom because he was the protector of the home. And they liked messing with the women, you know, especially Deanna. But, you know, Amber certainly got her fair share of it. But she was able to flee the house, something that Deanna couldn't do. So, you know, she had an escape route. So, I mean, Deanna felt bad at the time that she left, but she should be really happy that she did, because she was excluded from the worst of the haunting.
Now, did she experience anything outside of the home? Because, I mean, you and I both know that sometimes that can happen, and especially when you've got the battlefield of the mind going on. Did Amber have any kind of experiences out with the actual location?
Yeah, that would be a question for you. I don't think, has Amber ever had a paranormal experience before?
Well, what Amber had afterwards, Joni, is she had nightmares.
Okay.
She had nightmares about the house.
Not surprised.
Jock, it's like this haunting. I told Joni, I have post-traumatic stress from this haunting.
Mm-hmm.
I asked Joni. Joni's been so good for me and so wonderful. And before I met her, I had a lot of unanswered questions. And Joni is like putting together a puzzle. Joni put every piece into place for me.
That's fantastic.
Yes. Yes. And I love her dearly. And this is just more than a haunting. It affected you like, and I explained to Joni, Tom and I were constantly fighting. We never fought.
Yeah.
Tom and I don't fight.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very rare. This house was causing arguments, tension, leaving of the house, getting into fights. When we would fight, the paranormal activity rised. That's when we were, you know, arguing at the kitchen table when he was like, oh, let me guess, Dee, it's probably one of your ghosts, right? And then I'd be like, you know, like coming back at him. And that's when the door flew open. That's when Tom got the scratch. When we had an exorcist or an exorcism in the house. And there was a gentleman that came in that did that. As they were doing the exorcism, that's when I got the mark of three on my back, the letter M carved into my back. And at that moment, crazy. Everybody was in the kitchen. They heard a witch's laughter, a Boris Karloff kind of growl, and then a baby started screaming. So it's hard to explain everything that has happened in just such a short amount of time. But it's something that has changed us forever.
I think it will. I think that's it. I think, you know, once you go through an experience like this, it scars you for life. And, you know, one thing I wanted to ask you was, are you religious folks? Are you, I mean, do you follow any particular religion? Do you think this tested you in any way?
Well, I was born and raised Catholic. I won't say I go to church as often as I should, but yeah, I do believe. And Deanna was a Southern Baptist. So the joining of us became Captist. No, I don't. But we are religious, but we're not,
I grew up every Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah. I grew up Southern Baptist. Mm. I live in Pennsylvania and I'm very strong in my religion and my religion beliefs.
Yeah.
I shared it with mom and dad, and Joni had often said that misery loves company.
Yes.
I do know that the two previous owners in that house did a lot of research, did a lot of talking to other people. The men were alcoholics. The men were abusive. A lot of fights. And then here comes Tom and I, loving, trying to do the right thing in life, being good Christians, trying to be good people. Tom's a pharmacist. You know, he does a lot for the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that has a lot to do with it.
Do you think it tested your, do you think it really tested your faith and your belief at one point? Do you think, did you question your belief in any way?
I did.
Your faith in any way? Yeah, I can imagine.
I did. I'm ashamed to say.
Oh, no, please don't. That's, I would, if you said no, I would be very surprised, to be honest. So please don't feel that that's a negative thing at all. That's expected.
Is it? Okay. Because, you know, my faith was so strong that I kept praying to God. And then sometimes he would help me out. I felt in my heart that, I mean, because Joni can contest, I had a very, very, very negative entity there. His name was, oh my gosh, did you read that about Ephraim and Christiana?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh my gosh, Chuck. She's still, we've lived in our new home for the last 2 years. And she's still my guardian angel. Mm. The story about that is, am I jumping out of your
question? No, just carry on.
Are you okay?
No. We just carry on as normal. We've actually lost Jody, but she'll probably jump back in. We must have just lost her feed there. But we'll just carry on.
Okay, I hope you. Okay, because my last relationship in my marriage was very abusive.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to get away from that abusive situation that I was in, my husband was a severe alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
I had nowhere to go when I had to flee the house. So I would get in my car and I would go to cemeteries and sit at cemeteries because there was nowhere else for me to go, you know, at 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, because I couldn't be there under...
God love you.
His drunken rage.
I appreciate you sharing that. I know it's hard to share.
Oh, it is. So thank you. Thank you.
No.
I went to this one particular cemetery in Hanover. And I told Joni, this is another thing that I never thought of, but I am a firm believer in this now. I picked up this dark, mean entity, and his name was Ephraim.
I remember
that.
And
the reason why I know that is not to jump ahead of the story, but I did a lot of research on it. To go back to the story, I would go back to the house, to the haunted house in Maple in Hanover. And then all of a sudden, Jock, I remember that I had broken my knee at work, and I slept on the first floor because I could no longer sleep on the second floor for the hauntings and the stories that occurred on the second floor. Mm. But when I was asleep there in this bed, I remember the doorknob, like Amber said, would go back and forth and go back and forth, and I would hear the jiggling on the door. So what had happened at that time, I remember laying on my side asleep, and what had happened is this, it was like I was levitated, like I know this sounds bizarre, but it's the only way I can explain it.
No,
I felt like, okay, thank you. I felt like my soul came out of my body, and I was up on the ceiling looking down on myself.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm dreaming.
Yeah.
You know, I'm dreaming.
But it feels real. It feels you in the moment. That's as real as it's ever going to get.
Yeah, exactly. And as I was up on the ceiling, I heard the jiggling of the door. I heard the door opening, and this big black mass came out of the door. And Jock, as it was coming out, which I was watching it from the ceiling, I saw this thing slithering to the bed. As this thing, this black mass was slithering, it was taking a formation. And as this formation started to appear, this image had a top hat on. It was shirtless. But from the waist down, it was a serpent.
Wow.
And as I was watching it, all of a sudden, I was just thrown right back into my body.
It was showing you, absolutely showing you that it had control of your, it was able to enter into your mind and your dream state and everything else that was going on.
Now and you, then I was thrown, but Jock, I was thrown into my body.
Yeah.
And at that point, this entity literally came up, pinned me down, slithered up on me.
And held
it
you.
Got right, it held me down. And I just remember, okay, I'm back in my body. This is happening. And it just came up on me. And it started running its hands. It's very hard to talk about.
No, I understand that. And you can skip that point because I know how that would feel. And I know exactly where you're going with that. And it's violation of the spiritual body, violation of the human form. Violation is the word that we'll use for that.
And it was touching me inappropriately. It said, I can smell you. I can taste you. And you were mine.
Do you know what? At that point, I remember my wife, Joanne, and I, we looked at each other and we were like, oh my goodness, I think we're getting Joanie coming back. I'm just letting her in. She's going to connect in a minute. But yes, I understand. And you know, as I say, my wife and I had a bit of a wow, aha moment there as well. And we discussed your case, and we discussed the book and everything you were going through. And I'm so sorry that you went through that. We have Joanie coming back to us. We lost her. She's connecting now. That's awesome.
But Jock, through that experience, there was a woman. Joanie's
back. Where did you dematerialize somewhere, Joanie? Did we lost you?
No sound,
Joanie. No sound, Joanie.
You got your
no
microphone sound, off.
Okay. Can you
there
hear
we
me
go.
Out?
Yeah, I'll get my audio guy to just get that one out. Yeah. Welcome back to the party, Joanie.
Thank you. I lost my internet and I had to reboot my computer, so I was in a little bit of panic there. So I'm glad to be
And you know what? It's very funny because you remember the video that I sent you earlier on about how to connect and that we might lose internet and just to carry on. I recorded that literally minutes before I sent it to you. So that's...
yeah, I know.
Talk about weird synchronicities.
Machine, you know?
Yeah, and that's another story. Well, welcome back. We're just carrying on. Deanna and Tom have shared some very personal things, which I'm, you know, very sensitive to and happy that they did that. I want to jump on to the paranormal investigators because I personally, for me, this is only my opinion, and I'm sure Joni shares the same thing. I believe that the 90% of paranormal investigators, there's very few that are professional enough that take the emotions, the conditions, and the suffering that people like yourself are going through. They're too busy trying to get the pomp and circumstance and run by the ego. And I'm a big no-no with some paranormal. I very seldom do I work with paranormal teams, and if I do, they're handpicked with people that I've trusted over many, many years, have a good base in parapsychology and things like that. But you guys really went through it with the paranormal community. Tell us a little bit about that, and you know, because you were desperate. You were desperate, Dee, for some answers, and you started reaching out to the community, but it didn't go that way. It didn't go the right way for you.
No. I told Tom that I believed our home was haunted. And I just said, I'm going to go to the library and I'm going to do some research on this house. And I'm going to find out the last two people that lived in our home. And I'm going to do some research. And I started going to the neighbors. Some of the seniors that lived in our neighborhood, in particular, there was a couple of people across the street from us. And one of them, her name was Linda. And I was just questioning everybody about what I found. I went to the Pennsylvania Library, the real room, I printed out all this information on the people who died there, found out that there had been a boy that was murdered in the basement. Steve DeShavi, when we did the Dead Files, he had discovered that. But I wasn't welcomed in by the community. People were very tight-lipped about it, which I understand. I'm an outsider coming in. They didn't want to discuss it, except when I went over to this woman, Linda's house, I did ask her I described the two gentlemen that lived there at the house. I said, you know, I'm having vivid dreams. That was another story, Jock. I had, I won't get into that, but that was another story. But I was having vivid dreams about the two men that lived in that house. And when I went over to Linda's house across the street, I asked her if she knew the previous owners, and she said, yes, she did. And she said, matter of fact, hold on, I got some pictures where we used to do picnics, or my husband was good friends with the men, and I'll show you some pictures. Well, I described them to her, but when she brought out the pictures, I just said, oh, this is Clayton, and this is Lynn. And she looked at me, and she was like, how did you know that?
That's crazy.
Why are you asking me I said, well, Linda, I've seen these people in my dream. They're telling me to get out of the house. And then people were not receptive to that. And Tom's the one who said, you know, you better pipe it down. You're not getting a good response. When I went to the Pennsylvania Real Room at the library, that I won't name here in Hanover, there was a woman there named Elizabeth. I asked her for help on the property in the homes and if there had been any death occurrences there and so forth. She told me to come back the following week. And when I did come back, she threatened me. She said, if you know what's good for you, you will drop this. And I'm not going to discuss this with you. And she said the descendants of the family are still alive. And if you know what's good for you, you'll drop it. And she turned around, marched off.
And I think so a lot of that had to do with, there was a story circulating that a boy was shot to death in the basement. And he was the illegitimate son of one of the homeowners. And he was causing a lot of problems. They think that he might have had some kind of mental issues, like he was burning cats alive in barrels and doing all kinds of horrible things. And then all of a sudden, he died of a gunshot wound in their basement. And some of the stories circulating suggested that he was shot to death by his uncle. And so that's some of the reason why they were shutting her down, because they didn't want that story out there where it could harm the family. But I mean, you know, the basement is where the portal is. So I think that the death definitely had something to do with the haunting, or one aspect of it anyways.
You know, as you and I both know, wherever there's murder, there's mayhem, and there's a lot of emotion, and there's a lot of horrible negative things that happen, it can create the right conditions for those portals to open. I think what you'll agree, ladies and gentlemen, is this story has got so much to it that helps to educate people who may have an interest in the paranormal that may be unhealthy. And certainly, I wouldn't want anyone to go through what Deanna and Tom went through. And guys, I want to thank you. You know, I think in the next section, we're going to go more into the paranormal side of things, and Joni's going to discuss more about how the paranormal teams work and maybe what was questionable and what was not. I think it's very important. I've been looking forward to bringing you guys back on, I think, for part two, which will be good for everyone. If everybody's up for that,
we'll want to do. Sounds good to me.
Sounds good to us.
And I definitely want to thank you guys for being on Deadly Departed, and hopefully that any of the issues that we had will be ironed out. And Joni and I will discuss the next date for the part two. And you guys that are listening in, please go check out the book. It is an amazing book. I'm going to put some links down. You're going to see this, I don't even like to call it a story, but I'm just going to say this educational aspect of things. We're going to have it in Paranormal Daily News, and we're going to have it on somewhere else that we're announcing very, very soon. Stay tuned, guys, for part two, because we're getting more and more in-depth into this haunting and the terrible afflictions that these guys went through. Deanna, Tom, Joni, thank you so much for giving us your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Deadly Departed with renowned evidential medium and author Jock Brocas. If you like what you've heard, make sure to pick up a copy of the Deadly Departed book. Don't forget to share the episodes and send in your questions to us about anything paranormal and the afterlife. Tune in next time to Deadly Departed, the do's, don'ts, and dangers of afterlife communication.